Well, happy Easter. I know that the sermon title, Grief and Resurrection, almost kept some of you away because it seemed kind of dark. But without the dark, there is no light. And Easter is related to Good Friday, and Easter is related to spring, as spring is related to winter and the seasons of our heart. It is a holiday and a holy day that I think has an awful lot more to give than simply the acceptance or the rejection of a literalistic interpretation of Scripture. And I'm going to be giving what I think is a little different viewpoint. I know it's a different viewpoint for me because I was doing this memorial service a week ago, and I said something that I had never said at a memorial service before, and it struck me as true. And I will get to it in just a paragraph or two. Well, that's a clergy paragraph, which is like a wife's 2 minutes. I know. You figured out the rhythms of my talks. I can see that. Well, 2 weeks ago, I was giving a memorial service for my friend Jim, whose life and whose dying and whose death many of you here followed as I accompanied him as best I could on the journey. And his dying was really hard, and it was hard to watch his diminishment, how he changed. Here was this guy, 6'5", 255, 260 pounds, who the cancer took in 4 months, to stooped over with the cancer in his spine, to 170 pounds, to so diminished. His hair fell out, the stubble came back patchy and gray, and the last picture I had of him in the hospital, as I leaned over and kissed him, he was still alive, but his body temperature was around 95 degrees. That last picture, that last look, will stay in my head because it is reality. Dying and diminishment are realities. But I realized something, that by the time I came to do his memorial service, only 2 weeks later, that picture was still in the scrapbook of my memory, but it wasn't the default position. His hair was back, and it was brown. He was standing straight in my imagination. His spine healed. The glint was back in his eyes, and he was, may I say, this incredibly, extraordinarily gorgeous human being once again. And I realized that I had resurrected him. I had brought him back, not to full life, because it will not be the same. Death is real. But I had brought him back to a different place in my life. I had changed the default position from those last terrible days to a more comfortable place. The same thing absolutely happens with my mother. I don't erase my last picture of her that I had as she stood at a walker waving me goodbye from Northern California when I visited her when she was fully alive for the last time at the age of 92. I don't erase the picture of her in the hospital after the stroke that really quickly took her. I see those in the photo album that are part of the expanse of my memories, of the whole photo album that I have of her in my life. When I think of my mother today, she's 50. She's younger than I am. She's filled with energy. Somehow she's still mad at George Bush. I haven't worked that out yet. But she's full of energy and full of passion and interested in politics. And her eyes are shining. And that is the picture. Not a denial of what was at the end, but that is the default picture that I carry in my head and in my heart. And I bring her and all of those whom I have loved, who have touched my life, back to a comfortable place and give them new life, new healing in my own healing heart. I think that's part of the magic of spring. I think it's part of actually what Scripture is talking about. When we turn to the Easter story in the Gospels, 3 days, depending on how you count, there's a little creative bookkeeping in terms of how those 3 days are accounted, differences between how a Jewish day runs and how a Roman day runs, and there's a little kind of Arthur Anderson stuff that's going on with the 3 days. But 3 days after seeing Jesus in his agony, seeing him humiliated, seeing him whipped and scourged and rejected, seeing him nailed on a cross, and crying out in his own pain and suffering and bewilderment, a kind of bewilderment that every human being has felt, which is, why hast thou abandoned me? After seeing that and the hard death, 3 days later, Mary Magdalene encounters him, not in the grave, not in the tomb. And as she approaches in the biblical story, he warns her to shrink back. He says, don't come and touch me, because I'm not fully ascended. He's clearly in a middle position, not fully alive as he was with his companions, where he preached, where he taught, where he did miracles, where he sat and he ate with people. Nor is he fully dead and locked away and out of their lives. Whatever people believe on a literal or non-literal basis, it does not interfere with that belief to understand that on that Easter morning, there was a middle ground, that Mary Magdalene saw him not as he was on the cross in all of his pain, nor completely healed and holy and arisen in her heart where she and her disciples would keep him, but in transition between those two places. And a transition that, interestingly enough, takes 40 days. Till Shavuos, till Pentecost. I think this is how we grieve. I think this is how we heal. We move, and I've used this before, we move people from in front of our eyes to inside our hearts. But we do something else when we grieve. We move them from before our eyes and that last view to another place, to a place where we can keep them warm and alive and inspirational and be in touch with their living and not simply with their dying, and be in touch with their life and not simply with their death. I think that is part of the great Unitarian hope of springtime and of Easter. It is that we heal. It is that those people who have been in our lives and touched our lives and informed our lives are still available and accessible to us. They still touch us. They whisper to us at night in our dreams. We feel their presence and we feel their absence, both in times of joy and in times of sorrow. And they are present to us. And while it is not our first choice and it is not what we would want, it is something. Many years ago, when I was far more infallible in my sense of theology and religious beliefs, when I disapproved of cut flowers and didn't get the metaphor, I was pretty sure that this whole resurrection and afterlife business was just our own neurotic denial. Now, I'm not denying that we're neurotic or that we deny, but I don't think that that's really what the afterlife or resurrection is about. I have had the awesome and intimate privilege of being with people as they died. And the term passed away. I also used to disapprove of it. It seemed like a euphemism. Why don't you just come up and say died? Well, you know something? Most of the time, it is like passing away. It's not like movies. It's not dramatic. Almost every time I remember holding hands with people and with family and looking as the breathing slowed and listening as the breathing slowed and became irregular, became shallow, and at the moment when the last breath took place, we often missed it. And we would look at each other and say, well, now? Is this it? It is a passing that is gentle and not dramatic, and I cannot remember in my over 35 years of being a clergyman anyone who was in the dying position who felt terrified. It's the living who are frightened, the dying who have this instinct. Now, what the instinct is about, that they are going to close their eyes and then they're going to open them somewhere else, is that neurotic denial, or is that built in? Does that have an evolutionary benefit to it? I don't know, but it seems to be true. I know that in my own experience, and this is personal testimony, when I was, I believed dying, and actually I believed dead. I was on the gurney, on the table, and I could not breathe, and I was seeing myself from up on high. No, not on that high, just ceiling level. And I'm looking down at the body. I remember very distinctly the dog that did not bark. I was not afraid. There was no fear in there. Being a good Unitarian Universalist, I was filled with questions. I was going, wow, this is interesting. I'm dead and I'm still thinking. Hey, this is pretty neat. I wonder how long consciousness lasts. I wonder what's next. I don't think that the idea of an afterlife really comes out of our fear for ourselves. I think that resurrection and an afterlife comes out of our terrible sense of loss of others. I think it's not selfish. I think that it is generosity of spirit. That there are people from who, when removed from our lives, the pain seems to be more than we can bear. And so we don't accept that final picture. We don't accept their finitude. We take them back from the grave. We take them back from the sick bed. We take them back from the time of disease and enfeeblement, and we give them new bodies and new spirits and new smiles. And no, again, it is not the same and it is not as good, but it is something. I've always wondered about people worrying about ghosts and spirits and being haunted. I don't get it. All of my ghosts are welcome. They are blessed visitors in my heart and in my memory. When we look at Easter time at the rhythms of life and of death, and the hope that we have for something more, I look at all of the people who have blessed my life. And I look inside at how they have touched me and changed me, and how often I think of them, because we don't get over the deaths of the people whom we love. We get through it. And getting through it is to find that healing. To grieve is to take the extreme pain and turn it first into kind of the loose tooth of memory that we wiggle, and then into joy and blessing and inspiration, and keep them in our hearts. Without denial of the finality, but centered on what is good and what is ennobling. Now, the religious have debated for millennia about resurrection. And you can read the Torah, and you'll see two interpretations of resurrection. The Orthodox believe that there is physical resurrection. The non-Orthodox say, no, 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 it's spiritual. Also, in the Christian scriptures, there is the idea of a physical resurrection, and there is the idea of a perfect and eternal body that is spiritual. Our spirits heal. What happens after that final breath? I don't know, but I don't fear. I fear the loss of others. I fear the grieving that we go through when people are removed from us. And I look to give the people I love some sense of immortality. And I think that that is natural, whatever our theology is. Shakespeare said it probably best, but that was his job. He said of his beloved, as he immortalized her in Sonnet 18, "But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest, nor shall death brag that thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal rhymes to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe and eyes can see, so long lives this," these words, these memories, "and this gives life to thee."